Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Cynthia Cherish Maller and Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. So before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love. That is spelled L-U-V and hashtag using Primary Food or Heritage underscore Radio or Rev Love. So welcome to the fourth episode of the second season of Primary Food. And what exactly is primary food? So I had learned this great concept in nutrition school at IIN, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, that the food you eat, you know, the stuff we put in our mouths, chew, enjoy, like the pizza, the cake you have, we consider that to be secondary food. Primary food is everything else in life that nourishes us before we sit down to eat. And that's stuff like meaningful conversations or DMCs, deep meaningful conversations, enjoying music, reading a book, hanging out with friends, cooking food, a great job, sitting and listening to radio, creative expression, playing games, exercise. And I'm so glad I learned this because it was the high quality primary food that I kept in my life while going through chemotherapy last year that kept me happy and healing my cancer. So you can call in live today. Here's the number, 718-497-2128. We are live right now coming from Roberta's Pizza. And again, the number 718-497-2128. So last episode, last week, guest Susan Hannigan, life coach, with a focus on the psychology of eating, was our guest. And today we're going to continue that conversation about being happy and proud about what you eat. Because I had disclosed before that I had gotten pretty sick because I'm pretty sure I was not happy about what I was eating and I would just eat what was there. So now in life I have a very, very different understanding of what and how I'm eating. I make sure I enjoy it. So people achieve being happy and proud about what they eat in many ways. And today's guest does it with a compassionate heart and mind. Today's guest is Kiki Adami, also known as the Veganizer.
Hello, how are you?
And I'm pretty well versed in the topic of being plant-based and vegan and vegetarian. Though right now, as I'm navigating brain fog, we're trying to figure out what is going to lift that for me. So I eat plant-based as much as possible. And Kiki is a... Well, let's talk about what the Veganizer is, because I love that title. So Kiki, I'm going to pretend that I don't know anything about the topic.
Okay.
Just so that I can get you to teach who's listening. What is vegan and what does vegan mean to you?
Well, I suppose every person's truth is what vegan is. So if you're to say, what is vegan and what is vegan to me, that's one question. Mm. And what vegan means to me is nothing. It means I'm compassion, first and foremost. I am filled with compassion, and as a result, I am vegan. So compassion comes first.
So keep talking about the compassion part, because I think people think vegan and they're just thinking a diet, a fad, a style of eating. But what's the crux of veganism?
Veganism comes down to one thing. It is consideration for everyone else, and it is the core belief that your advantages in life do not cause disadvantages for anyone else. Whether that other thing has fur on its body, whether that other thing has tusk on its body, your advantages in life cannot cause disadvantages for others.
So you're talking about, I love that you said someone. Now that's a concept that a lot of people don't think of animals as being a someone. So talk about that.
Well,
animals are a someone.
It's unbelievable that we have this dissonance between us and animals as if we are this higher being. Because anybody who has a dog can tell you first and foremost that that dog, they're not sure who saved who. I have a 70-pound pit bull. His name is
all the time.
Baby Blue. And honestly, we just got done watching, my husband and I, Paul, he's here. We just got done watching the documentary on Michael Vick's dogs.
Oh.
And, you know, I just sat there and held Baby Blue for the hour and a half. And, you know, dogs are so unique. Like, they have this way of just going through life. They're so much more accepting of humans than we are of animals.
And ourselves.
And ourselves. And I just sat there holding him saying, you know, I cannot imagine life any other way besides sheer compassion for all living creatures. Mm. And then I think back, how did I go through life before I was vegan, not realizing that there is this whole millions of species who don't have voices.
Right.
And the moment I made that connection, it was like I had so much more power in the world.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Do you have other films that you recommend? What are other films that people who are listening, I mean, our community for sure has heard about veganism and everyone's curious if they're not already diving into it or delving into it in some way. But sometimes they need a little extra push or something else that's going to say, you know what, that was the conversion point for me.
Yeah.
So films they can see?
Well, I have to be totally honest. My transition into veganism started completely from vanity purposes. And I have no regrets at all because it ultimately led me down the road to making the complete connection. But
and what does that mean for vanity purposes?
Like, you know, I just wanted to lose weight. I was a dancer and, you know, I was in leotard 6 hours a day. And one day I was eavesdropping on someone talking about this quote unquote amazing diet called the paleo diet. And I had already been vegetarian since the time I was 12. Just because I didn't like the way meat felt. I hadn't made the connection yet. I didn't like the way it tasted. I had zero attraction to meat since I was 12, and I was eating a piece of chicken and I pulled the chicken out of my mouth and a vein stretched and snapped. And I kid you not, Cynthia, I was looking at my wrist as the vein snapped, and I saw the veins in my wrist. And it was like at that moment, I was like, wow, I'm eating a dead body.
Hmm.
How does this make any sense in any way, shape, or form? And so basically from 12 until my late teens, I was vegetarian, but complete junk food vegetarian.
I was there.
Yeah.
I was a junk food vegetarian for about 8 years.
And it was very hard for me to be thin as a dancer. You know, I was exercising all these hours, but the pounds just kept packing on. And so I tried this paleo diet thing whilst being vegetarian, which between the two of them, you become vegan.
That's so interesting. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Explain that a little bit because I like hearing that.
So it was a diet for me at first. It was not a lifestyle. It was not a mentality and a place of being. It was just, I want to lose weight, so I'm going to eat things that make me lose weight. And 20 pounds in 1 month dropped from my body.
Amazing.
And I could not believe how beautiful I felt, how radiant I felt. And I ended up being a raw foodist. So again, still vegan, but it was strictly a diet for me. I had not made the connection yet to the bigger picture. And then when I was, I think, 21, I saw Food Inc.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And Food Inc. is available on Netflix. And
highly recommended.
Yeah, it's truly a huge game changer for me. And I basically saw them put baby chicks up to an iron.
Yeah.
And the reason for that was because the chicks are so stressed out as they grow that they peck each other. So they have to burn off their beak.
Right.
So for me, it was a phenomena that I could not believe I had gone 21 years without knowing. And had I had known that from birth, I'd say, get that chicken away from me and give him to me to adopt.
It reminds me of that video of the little boy and the octopus. Have you seen that? There's a little boy who's upset because he's eating octopus and he's realizing
The Portuguese boy.
Yes.
Yes.
And he's saying, this is an octopus?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to eat this. That's amazing that you realized that yourself at a young age.
Yeah. I mean, I wish it had happened. Oh, you mean when I was 12?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like in my whole life I've been vegan since birth. It was like my destiny to go down that road.
Mm.
I remember I was driving to go see Disney Princesses on Ice with my friend Alex, and a truck of pigs passed us and I could see their snouts.
And it was upsetting.
And no, I was like, oh my God, pigs, that's so cute. And my friend Alex goes, Kiki, they're going to become bacon. And I sobbed so hard, I had to pull over on the side of the road and, you know, be with that for like 10 minutes, but still not vegan. I was in high school.
Right.
And then, you know, it's kind of like, I have a friend who's gay and vegan as well. And she says that she went through her whole life, you know, feeling awkward and like not really sure where she fit in. And then one day in high school, she realized she was gay. And then it was like she like ran down the hallways leaping for joy because all these things and life just made sense. And then she was able to, you know, go through life with direction. And that's kind of how I felt about this. It was like, oh, now I get it. I get why I was such a rebel. I get why I had like such strong feelings about justice for the underdog. I'm vegan.
That's so interesting. Someone had just told me recently, just last week, that I was a closeted vegan. this is what happened to me through treatment. I had been on a plant-based diet, vegan diet, for years before my diagnosis, but 2 years, but I was very much vegetarian. And my treatment, Herceptin, is made of the ovarian cells of the Chinese hamster.
Oh, wow.
And I said, my treatment's not vegan. And it really messed with me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to use the F word for a second. Fucked with me.
Yeah.
Because talk about your benefit taking away from others and a lot of others.
Yeah.
How many little hamsters did it take to make one vial of my treatment?
Yeah. Wow.
So I had a lot of tumult in me.
Yeah.
You know? So I said, hey, you know, I'm going to just go through this and just get to understand what felt uncomfortable about it and not. And then once I'm through treatment, get back on my beautiful way. So I'm like past that part, thank God.
But, oh gosh.
And that's a conversation that I've had with many people who are, they're like, don't worry, that's still vegan. I'm like, no, it's not. And it's like, by nature of the definition,
oh goodness,
that's not, you know.
Yeah.
But at that time when I was like, I feel like, you know, I guess this is really feels like I need this, and it was taken away from me. And the interesting thing was that I ended up being taken off of this treatment. My body didn't react to it.
Wow.
React well to it. I actually became very allergic to it, so I feel like I got spared from it. But I realized that in my heart, I was like, yeah, to save my own life, I wanted it.
Right.
I was like, well, that's interesting. It was like an interesting conflict.
Yeah.
So if anyone has anything to say about that, you can call in. Listeners, we're live. So call in. Tell us what you think about veganism, the V word. You can ask me and Kiki any questions you want. And the number again is 718-497-2128. So we'll take a quick little break and then we'll come back with some facts about veganism and a little bit more about what Kiki does.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Well, let's talk about what Kiki and I just discussed during this break. She just told me I'm not a monster. I needed to hear that. So bring up what you said and the movie and that, because that's I think I really need to hear that.
So, like I said, I just saw the Michael Vick documentary, who I do believe is a bit of a monster.
he's a monster. Yeah.
And he was caught doing one of the largest dog fighting scandals in U.S. history. And in the documentary, one of the new foster moms or adoptive parents of the fight dogs said something that was really resonating with me, and it was, these dogs don't need to be rehabilitated. They need to be recovered. Mm. They're victims, and they're not monsters. And I thought, you know, this kind of reminds me of the Hunger Games, where these people are being forced into a situation where they need to survive, and they have to kill to survive. Mm-hmm. They're not monsters. They're just trying to survive. And, you know, you said that you felt tumult with trying to embrace this non-vegan treatment, but you were not a monster. You were just trying to survive.
I needed that. Kiki could tell. I was, like, crying inside as I was telling that story. I was like, oh, I feel horrible. Well, definition from V Between the Lines, being vegan is healthy and good for the environment and the animals. But do you know, veganism is a lifestyle that avoids all animal foods such as meat, dairy, eggs, and honey, animal-derived products like leather, and as far as possible, products tested on animals. So every time I would come across that, you know, products and science and medicine tested on animals, and I knew it was like, I felt, I had the big, like, scarlet G of guilt on me. And I was like, I'm a monster. But I'm getting past that. However, still, you know, very vegan at heart, closeted vegan, as I was told. So studies have shown that eating a plant-based diet makes you happier and less stressed. Agree or disagree, Kiki?
100% agree.
Okay. Happier and less stressed. And not just you happier and less stressed, but I'm pretty sure the animal.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about what you do. The Veganizer. Before we do that, I'm going to read a quote from veganizernyc.com. Any restaurant, I love this quote, any restaurant that does not offer vegan or vegetarian options is burning money. Everyone knows that the vegan chooses where the group eats. Mm-hmm. That's Don Sweeney, president of the National Restaurant Association. Talk about that.
I mean, it speaks pretty clearly, but it's so true. You know, my parents, I'm the only vegan. I'm the youngest out of 10 children.
Oh, wow.
And I come from a family of siblings that are hunters and barbecue-loving people.
How do you manage going home and that's all around you?
That is the only stress in my life, is when I'm surrounded by people I love that are harming themselves. I see them harming themselves and I see them harming others. But it's a very fine line, because you don't want to ostracize your family, which, to be completely honest, is something I have done a little bit, because it has been so difficult for me. But I'm working on that.
And how do they treat you? Do they treat your views and your ideas with respect, or?
No, some of them no, to be completely honest. But in regards to that quote, you know, my parents, I'm leaving for Alaska on Saturday for 2 months, and my parents are driving to me to say goodbye, going to a vegan restaurant. On Mother's Day, we went to a vegan restaurant, even though it was her day.
Right.
If she wanted to share a meal with me, she had to be at a vegan restaurant.
Because everyone knows that the vegan chooses where the group eats.
Exactly.
So you have been working with restaurants. This is what does the veganizer mean? Let's tell everyone.
So at this point in time, in 2016, there's not a single excuse to not be vegan, whether you love cheese, whether you love leather, whether you love milk. Every single product, except for maybe the John Dory fish, is able to be veganized. And the thing is that most of the time, the vegan versions are identical or better than the non-vegan versions. So Veganizer is basically my idea that I came up with about a year ago. I married a restaurateur, and this restaurateur happened to be owning a paleo restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you don't know what the paleo diet is, the quote unquote theory is that you eat like a caveman. I would love to tell you how they developed that theory later on, but yeah. That would be a
bookmark
tangent.
That.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. So anyway, I married this guy and he was a meat eater and, you know, I wasn't okay with the fact that we were making money off of animals. And so I basically gave him an ultimatum and said, either we go vegan or I'm out.
Wow.
And
it's a serious ultimatum.
It was. And lucky me, I have a guy that loves me. He went vegan. Now, he didn't do it overnight. He watched a movie, Earthlings. Mm-hmm. He watched the movie Cowspiracy. Mm-hmm. He watched the movie Forks Over Knives, Food Inc. He basically just went on Netflix for 4 hours and YouTube and watched all these videos. And like that, he was, okay, I'm vegan. It makes sense. And this is a serious paleo guy, you know? Wow. All it took was a little information, and he saw the truth. He saw the light. So now we've got two vegans running a paleo restaurant, which was kind of strange.
That is a little bit strange.
So.
And then
we actually forced all of our servers to watch Cowspiracy.
Wow.
And we had them watch it. We sent them the link, and they wrote written responses back to me how they felt about the documentary and working at Goost Organics. And many of them went vegan. Many of the servers went vegan.
Interesting.
We had our cooks, who most of them spoke Spanish, watched the Spanish translation of Cowspiracy. Many of them went vegan or at least cut dairy or at least cut red meat. Cow.
Now, that's great that you mentioned that because culturally, the appearances or maybe the challenges are stronger in different cultures to exclude dairy and meats and things, but it can still be done.
Of course.
I mean, my background's Filipino. It's like pork.
Yeah. You just decide one day you're vegan and then it happens. It's not like this crazy phenomena. It's like, just make the decision and then you do it.
What do you say to people who tell you it's just so hard?
Well, I say to them, I eat 3 times a day, just like you. I don't know what's hard about it.
Mm.
I put the fork to my mouth, just like you.
And then what do you say to the people who say, and where do you get your protein from?
I tell them I avoid protein at all costs.
Oh.
At all costs, I'm avoiding protein.
Do you avoid protein, like even plant-based protein? Or
no, I don't even think about it. I mean, does a zebra think about where it's getting its protein?
Great point.
It just eats and drinks. You've never seen a malnourished zebra in your life, have you?
No, I haven't.
We are the only people asking these questions. Where is my B12? Where is my protein? I think there's like one case in the entire history of the U.S. of a person who's been protein deficient, and he like just arrived here from Zimbabwe. Like, there's not a single case in the history of the U.S. of a protein mall.
I love
person.
That just goes back to the conversation in last week's episode also, really just letting your body guide yourself instead of, hey, people eat a lot of things like this because it's thrown in front of them in commercials, the traditions of the grill and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. But I love what you just said. I have not seen a malnourished zebra. Nor a malnourished gorilla.
None of them.
Or
they're all
elephants.
Just eating when they're hungry, and that's that. We're the only weirdos asking all these questions and making all these rules.
We're the two-legged ones, the humans. Okay, so let's talk about how you've affected restaurants.
So after Paul and I veganized our own restaurant, it was called Goost Organics.
Did you completely 100% overhaul it?
It was, we turned that steering wheel 180 degrees.
How did that affect you financially?
At first, for the first 7 months, we really suffered. There was a lot of backlash from our supporting clientele. Mm. You know, our Yelp page was nearly shut down because we got so many ones from people who were pissed off.
Truth. Wow.
I received a ton of emails of them saying they feel like we're slapping them in the face. It was just not a good time.
seven months of not a good time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Paul and I were fighting because he felt like I threw his restaurant under the bus. And in the end, you know, at one point we realized, are we going to have to close this restaurant? And so we did one final counting of numbers and projections and all these things that you have to do when you're a small business owner. And we realized it was June, I remember, oh my God, we've made more money this June than we've ever made. Holy cow. And, you know, I wrote an amazing newsletter to my people. I have, you know, quite a good following on social media. And I said, guys, we're going to make it.
Oh, that's wonderful. How did you do that? How did you achieve that after that time?
Persistence. And always playing with the food. And I think it took us, honestly, to be genuine, 7 months to really get a solid menu. And that menu is phenomenal.
Describe the menu. I just need to hear it.
We had coconut curries. We had lemon seitan chicken. We had, what is that? Lomo saltado, vegan lomo saltado from Peru. We had pastas. We had creamy zucchini pasta. We had raw stuff. We had vegan junk food. We had carrot cakes, brownies, tiramisu. Like, the food towards the end was just A++. And actually, our Yelp reviews in a matter of two months went up to 4 stars.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So, unfortunately, you know, a week after I sent that newsletter out, our investors served us and sued us.
Why is that?
Well, they sued me and Paul specifically because we veganized the restaurant, or as they claim, damaged the reputation of the business. And then there was another lawsuit towards the CEO, which I'm not really familiar with, but they ended up dropping the lawsuit after we had to fight it a little bit.
That's fascinating.
But unfortunately, you know, the restaurant paid for the lawsuit. So we ended up closing in August. Mm-hmm. And I was so pissed off because I was like, you know what? We probably would have had the most success this year than we've ever had. And their ignorance, from where I'm standing, it occurred to me as ignorance and frustration and anger led to them shooting themselves in the foot. And so I said, I'll be damned if this is the end of my impact, especially with my experience in the restaurant business.
Amazing.
So I said, screw it. I'm going to go out and veganize other restaurants.
And so what was the first one? And how did you veganize it? How do you approach restaurants? What's the process? Because this is so fascinating where you stomp into the place and you're like...
Well, a lot less stomping, more so like crawling and tapping them on the shoulder.
Yeah, tell us the process because this is so fascinating.
So it started off with just me and the chef that I had hired, that my husband had hired at Goose Organics, and he turned into this like little vegan cooking machine. We had like we couldn't believe it. He's from Mexico. His name's Ricky, and he's just like, he's working at Chloe's. He's actually the head chef at Chloe's now.
Oh, wow.
So
that's very cool.
Yeah, in a matter of 6 months, his potential and talent just purged out. It was unbelievable.
Amazing.
So Ricky and I asked Ricky if he would help me do it to another restaurant, and we would do one night only in the hopes that they would then use those vegan replacements on their regular menu, which has been the case so far. And so the first place we did was a pupusaria in Chinatown. And it's no bigger than this room. It's so tiny. And it was a line out the door. And, you know, you walked in, everything was entirely the same, except everything you ordered off the menu hanging on the wall was vegan.
Oh, wow.
So it said chicken, it said steak, it said turkey, except it was delivered to you in vegan form.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so it was a really popular event, huge success for me and Ricky. The food was not as good as I would have expected because we veganized the day of the event and it was just too stressful for us to veganize a whole restaurant. We taught them cashew cheese. We taught them how to ferment. We taught them how to make seitan, and it was just very overwhelming. And in retrospect, I think, wow, you know, it took Ricky 7 months to hone his skills. How did I expect these guys to do it in 4 hours?
I'm so hungry. I'm like, you're talking in front of me, but I'm about to pass out. Your mouth is moving and I'm just like, cashew cheese.
I should have brought you some.
Next time. So what was the name of that place? The pupuseria.
What was it called, babe? I don't remember. What was the name of the first place I veganized? Huh? Cabolito.
Okay, and do they still keep some of those items on their menu?
Yes, there is a disclaimer on their website and on the bottom of their menu that says anything can be ordered in vegan form.
Okay,
yeah,
that's very cool.
Yes.
All right, next success story.
Next story is Cafe Frida, which is a pretty popular Mexican restaurant in the Upper West Side. And
That's Joaquin Martinez, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know him.
Yeah, I know him.
Oh, yes. Okay. Got it. She's on my website reading his quote.
I know everybody.
I'm like, wow, you're really popular.
Yeah, I know everyone. And all his restaurants.
He has multiple, and he invited me to veganize all of them.
That's amazing. Yeah. So what did you do for Cafe Frida?
So at Cafe Frida, I was basically the salesperson in the beginning, just calling all these restaurants and saying, hey, can I veganize you? And when I called Joaquin, I was pretty clear that English is not his first language. I was pretty clear that he misunderstood me because he was like, okay.
That was too easy. You didn't understand me.
I said, I was like, wait, I'm going to start over and explain to you again what I want.
Then he was like, no, okay.
Yeah, no, and then he was like, yeah, I get it.
Okay.
And I was like, what? Did that actually just happen? And I, as the weeks went on, I like kept reminding him what I'm looking for, because I spoke to him about 2 months before the event happened. And he was so on board.
That's amazing.
I brought Ricky in. They worked together for 2 weeks. The event was sold out. It was an amazing event. The owner of the restaurant, what is her name? I'm forgetting her name. Elizabeth, I believe. But she came the night of the event, and she held my hand, and she cried. And I said, why are you crying? This is an amazing event. And she said, I just saw Cowspiracy. And I said, oh.
And then she said, I am hashtag officially veganized.
Yeah. That's our hashtag, by the way.
That was clever how I threw that
in. I loved it. But she said that she had seen Cowspiracy and she was losing sleep because she couldn't believe that her business was causing so much damage. And she had been kind of asking the universe for a sign, and then it happened that I called Joaquin.
Yeah.
And so it was like this weird phenomena that we ended up getting together.
That's amazing. I love. Did you tell her you're not a monster?
I did. I did tell her that.
A monster. No, I'm kidding. But how do you approach the restaurants? You tell them the nutritional aspect of it, the ethical and the financial?
Mm-mm.
No.
I feel it out. Obviously with Joaquin, I didn't need to say anything further than vegan. That was as far as I needed to go. But my following event, which was at Pagani, which is a super hot Italian fine dining place, I needed to talk numbers with him.
Okay.
So he was strictly into it for the business. But here I am 4 months later. He's doing his fourth veganizer event on Monday.
That's so interesting. And he's the one that says, I feel trendy now, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So veganism being trendy, what do you think about that? Does it matter?
As long as animals are being saved, I don't care what your intention is. I do believe that my journey took 7 years to become ethical. I started, like I said, I did it for vanity reasons at first. And, you know, I don't care. There's so many roads to Rome. However you get there, just get there.
And where's there? Describe it.
There is having 360 perspective on how your actions affect others.
On how your actions affect others. And others meaning not just human others.
Absolutely.
Living, breathing, thinking, cognitive.
Exactly. Any others. Earthling, anything that is inhabiting this earth, including grass, including trees, including bugs.
Oh, I just cut the grass. You just messed me up.
You monster.
I'm such a monster. No, I understand. Having respect for basically everything that lives and grows.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that. That's what sits deeply in me.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it was actually years ago. I was in high school. The reason I had become vegetarian in high school was because I became a member of, I think it was called either Justice for Animals is what it was called. And then I would do these, the street fairs. And wow, people would be so angry at me.
Yeah.
Like, why are you angry at me?
Yeah.
But I was, like you said, I was a junk food vegetarian. I was pretty much a pizzatarian.
Yeah.
A pizzatarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was a grilled cheesetarian.
Oh, you know, grilled cheesetarian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been there. But you can have grilled cheese now still.
Absolutely. What's I just had one for lunch yesterday.
Awesome. Okay. Tell me, what's the best cheese that melts nicely and doesn't feel like too, you know, one way or the other?
Sure. Well, my go-to cheese, if I'm not going to make it on my own or go to one of the vegan shop-ups, is Follow Your Heart.
Follow Your Heart.
It's
okay.
Follow Your Heart, readily available at every single Whole Foods, at even, you know, Acme's, I think, are starting to sell vegan cheeses now. So even if you're in a food desert, this is what I tell people all the time is go to your local Acme or your Pathmark or whatever that particular health food or regular grocery is. Mm-hmm. Talk to them because I'm telling you, the chains have them. I mean, I have a Pathmark literally directly in front of my apartment, and they have vegan cheese, vegan egg replacer, vegan milks. They're even selling the vegan sausages.
Yeah, I'm going to add to what you just said. So the Associated, which is at the base of my apartment building, mm-hmm. didn't have any plant-based anything. And I'm a little sensitive to soy, mm-hmm. breast cancer situation, all that. We can talk about that later. But they didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. So I had actually spoke to the manager and said, can you order these things? Because I will buy it. And he was more than happy to.
Of course. People just want to make money at the end of the day. So if you are going to support a company in one venue, they're going to keep going down that venue as long as the money's coming in.
As long as the money's coming, yeah. So now I see he has a little section there for the yogurts and
because
things like
that. Because of you. You did that.
And papayas.
And papayas.
Believe it or not, this place did not have papayas.
Oh, goodness.
And I said, can you please bring papayas in? And then they started to.
All you.
I feel so
because
powerful.
Because you use your voice and you're not afraid to make an unreasonable request.
I am powerful.
Yeah, you're papaya powerful.
So I love that we're talking about cheese for a sec. Because okay. That's also something that people are like, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. Can you talk about the addictive nature of cheeses?
Of course.
For a minute.
I mean, people are creatures of habit. And the moment you feel like your nature is being pulled away from you, those fists go up. Hmm. But by no way, shape, and you know, eating has like such an emotional effect on you,
yeah.
Right? People, I'm reading Jasmine Singer's book, Always Too Much, Never Enough. Hmm. And you know, you look at these like classic weight loss programs like Jenny Craig, where women in their 50s are doing Jenny Craig, and they're in their 50s, and they still don't know how to feed themselves with food. Because it's all about deprivation.
Right.
Because they have emotional addictions to food. Whereas my diet and your diet is all about liberation.
That's huge.
You know, we eat whatever we want as long as it's real.
Yeah.
We eat real food. And there's 20,000 edible fruits and vegetables, by the way. So don't talk to us about what do we eat. We've got 20,000 item menu in front of us.
Do you have another quick veganizer story before we go to break?
We just veganized Keg 229.
Where's that?
Which is on Front Street in the Financial District.
Okay.
Yeah. And they just did their second event with us. And both events were super packed. And it's classic American junk food, vegan food. We had bacon jalapeno mac and cheese cheeseburgers, mac and cheese, sloppy joe. Oh my God. Just think of like your standard, I'm drunk, what should I eat food? It was there. And everything was veganized. And the owner stated from her lips that this food is better than the regular menu.
Wow. So they're going to keep those items on the menu?
Sort of. We're in the midst of talking to her about that. But it changes everything because you have to change your food supplier. You have to change your money.
Of course.
Because things cost a little bit more. Some things cost a little bit less. But the conversation's happening.
Okay. Keep that one going. All right. We're going to take a little break and then we're going to talk about vegan challenges for ourselves. So I'm still here with Kiki Adami, the veganizer. How are you feeling?
I feel like a superhero when you say it like
the
that.
The veganizer. So I just bought a really fun book that was suggested to me by a friend of mine in Colorado. It's called The Taco Cleanse, 25 Vegan Recipes to Detox Your Dreams and Redefine Your Dinner.
Yes, I've heard of that. I heard it's a good read.
Someone named Cynthia is going to be tacoing a lot right now. We picked it up, and a couple of friends of mine are just going to kind of rejuvenate our taco style.
That's so great.
If you're saying it's just a good read, now I'm all like sad about it, but I'm going to try it. So I have friends who wanted to be more vegan.
Okay.
Starting with dietary reasons.
Uh-huh.
Fine. That's fine.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to get to the real nitty gritty of it.
Yeah.
People who want to take on a challenge or challenge themselves. I mean, I'm like, well, people say, I can't do that. Just drop it. And I'm like, okay, well then a day, two days.
Yeah.
3 days. What can you tell people in the next 2 minutes or 3 minutes, like to get them to just even start? Because if people are afraid to be more plant-based because they think it has to be an all or nothing.
Right.
That's really not the case. It doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
So there are people listening who are like, well, tell me something to tip me over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's two ways to jump in a pool. You either jump in or you tow it in 1 inch at a time. And
that's deep.
There's...
Hold on. Let me just internalize.
I wish there was like a...
Right, David in the booth. Like, that's deep.
So you can either do this. Option A is if you want to jump in the deep end right off the bat, and you're going to go into YouTube right now and you're going to watch this movie called Earthlings.
Mm-hmm.
Every person in the world should watch it.
Yeah.
Earthlings, yep. People. Earthlings.
And it's free.
And it's free. Option B is go onto Netflix, watch a ton of documentaries, free as well, and if you subscribe. And watch some documentaries, and as you learn, replace one meal one day this week as vegan. Next week, do 2 days. The following week, do 3 days. The following week, do 4 days. Either way, you're going to get in the pool. And it doesn't matter. Neither one is better, neither one is worse, because at the end of the day, you're still going to end up vegan if you do research.
I love the pool image. It's so perfect. So for people who are like hanging on to their meat with their claws.
Yeah.
What is it about meat? Is it the meat or is it the saltiness?
There's a really interesting theory going around right now called carnism.
Carnism.
And it kind of defines the human's psychological need for meat, because certainly we don't have a physical need for meat. And
right, there are bodybuilders who are on a completely vegan, yeah, plant-based diet.
The world champion weightlifter is ethical vegan.
There you go.
Yeah. Anybody is on Instagram, check out Dom's Thompson. You know, besides the fact that he's super hot, you know, he's a massive weightlifter. Sorry, Paul. But he will basically break any myth about protein that you've got. And so physically we don't need it. But what is the psychological draw for wanting to have that meat?
What's the carnism?
Carnism is this theory, and I'm not super familiar with it, so I may butcher it, so you should do your own research. But it's the man having control.
Hmm.
It's the defensiveness, it's the stubbornness of our nature that keeps you addicted to foods that needed to run from you, or, you know, it's just this weird phenomena that you have to have control over something.
That's so interesting.
And she goes back alpha. Through the psychology of it, and it's just so fascinating. And it makes perfect sense when you actually break down the anthropology, the psychology of how it works.
That's really interesting. And I think that rings true for a lot of the behavior behind eating meat is that kind of,
How many times have you heard, I've worked this hard to get to the top of the food chain. I'm not about to step down now.
Often. Personally, yeah, a few times. Where people are like, there's a food chain, right? I'm like...
Yeah, I would love to see you in the wilderness with a tiger.
And see what happens with this food chain.
Right. We pay people to give us meat and dairy for a reason.
I would definitely be at the bottom of the food chain if I was in the wild.
The slowest mammals on earth is who we are.
No, we have exactly a minute for you to tell the paleo story, if that can fit. You said the reason behind...
Oh, yes. Yeah. All right. So basically what the scientists did was they took a look at all of the... what are they called? The Paleolithic, you could say, people, the indigenous in Africa, the indigenous in Australia, the indigenous Eskimos. And they took their diets and they said, okay, on average, they're eating about 15% animal flesh. On average, they're eating 50% animal flesh. And on average, they're eating 35% animal percent flesh. Well, what the hell? Let's just average them together. And that's what we think that the cavemen ate 10,000 years ago.
Wow.
So today, in like 2000, they just averaged the indigenous, which, by the way, they were not thriving. They are surviving long enough to produce one child.
Interesting.
And so they're dying in their 40s, 50s, and 60s.
If even 60s, just long enough
to produce a child. And that is the diet that we are now, you know, fantasizing about with this sexy name, paleo, which is also known as the Atkins diet from the 1990s, which nobody does anymore. But it's just a new name for the Atkins diet. And it is not going to make humans thrive. It is simply, you know, it's good in one aspect because it cuts out dairy.
Right.
It's a little bit evolutionary in that respect, but it has nothing to do with cavemen. Cavemen ate grass, bugs.
Yeah, and I'm not into bugs.
And they weren't vegan. They, you know, they ate what was easy: lobsters, slugs, snails. They ate things that were slow because we are slow.
Oh, that's it right there. Okay, so veganizernyc.com.
Yes.
What are your social media hashtags?
So you can follow me on pretty much everything except Periscope. I'm a little behind on that. Instagram, Veganizer NYC, Facebook, Kiki Adamai, that's the best one, or my business page, Veganizer NYC. On Snapchat, I do a recipe a day, and that's Kiki Veganizer, K-I-K-I, Veganizer.
And one last thought about why veganism is the way to go?
It is the only way to be, man. It's going to save you, the planet, us all. It's just a phenomenal experience to be so connected with all the other beings on this planet.
Amen. Well, that's our episode of Primary Food with the Veganizer. And I enjoy my food more when I think about it this way.
Yeah, me too.
So come back for the next episode of Primary Food next Thursday, 6 p.m. See you then.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.